You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, very excited to dive into this week's episode. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, what's going on in your world?
Well, I took my wife to breakfast this morning and talking about awesome date conversation. We started talking about numbers, talking about stats a little bit, and I realized mid-conversation that there is a hole in all of my logic, all of our logic.
Everything you've learned in your entire life, there's a hole.
Everything. 2 + 2 is not 4. It's not 4. Thanks. All right, here it is.
I have no idea where you're going with this, but I'm on the edge of my seat.
All right, you start out with this $1,000. You have $1,000. At the end of the year, you make 100% return. How much money do you have?
$2,000. You've doubled it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, you've doubled it. All right, so let's say you had that same $1,000 and you make a 200% return. Have you doubled your money?
Interesting.
Or tripled your money?
Huh. Or quadrupled your money.
If I came to you and said, I can offer you 1,000% return guaranteed, most of us, I think, would say that's a 10X. You've 10X.
Yeah.
But it's breaking my mind to figure out what is a 200% return.
Yeah. Wow. That is fascinating. I've never thought about it like that. So, okay. Obviously, we've just said, at least what we believe we know, 99%, is that 100% return is doubling your money. So therefore, a 200% return, by definition, cannot merely be doubling your money.
Right. But if I had started this conversation over and I say, Brad, you have $1,000 and at the end of the year, you're gonna make 200%. Like, I would not be surprised if either of us would have just defaulted, oh, you doubled your money, right? But those both can't be a doubling of your money. You have to pick. And then if you pick one,
I suspect there's an answer. I don't know. You have to pick.
You have to pick. And I would say that most people, when they talk about doubling their money, they're like, man, I got a 100% return.
Yeah. I wonder if it's the actual. So if we're conflating two things, right? In terms of your return, which is the amount of growth versus what has happened to your original principal, right? So if 100% return, quote unquote, is doubling your original money, but you've also gone up, you've gone from, let's say, $1,000 to $2,000, right? So you've gone up your return, the amount that it's changed by is 100% of the original. So I suspect, and you might have an answer to this, I suspect is where we're going here, a 200% return would probably mean that it has grown by 200%. Right. And therefore, your final balance is ultimately 300% of your original. Right. So it's the 200% growth or $2,000 growth plus your original 1,000, right, to get you to 3,000. Does that stand to reason?
Well, it does. But I just went into a future value calculation on ChooseFI. We have our future value of investment calculator. I started with a principal of $1,000 and I gave us a 200% interest rate with a 1 year interval. And I came back, you have $3,000 at the end of that. You've tripled your money.
Okay. And that's what I just said, right? So that at least makes some kind of sense. Now, it's funny because when we were guessing about 2 minutes ago, I said, what about quadrupled? So my thought with that was, and I believe this to be erroneous based on 2 minutes of thought, but my original thought was, okay, a 100%, it's like compounding, right? Like, how many times do you double? That's what I was thinking. So 1,000 doubles to 2,000, and that would be 100% return. But 100% return on that 2,000 would then get you to 4,000. So that's why I was saying that.
Okay.
But I don't think that to be the case.
No. Okay. So the 100% return means you make an extra $1,000. The 200% return is an extra $2,000.
Yeah.
which would give you the same amount as multiplying your original balance times three, though, to be very clear, right? That's the difference.
Yeah.
But this is a point. So if you make a 1000% return, it is your initial balance plus 10x, right? It's your
plus 10 times to get you to 11.
See, this is why I got stuck in this conversation with my wife when she called me out on this. And I was like, I got to work through this. So there it is. Okay. All right. Hopefully all of us feel smart. You know, that show that was out there for a while, I don't know if Foxworthy's still doing it, but Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? I think there's individuals that have to admit they might've gotten, you know, checkmated a little bit there. And then those of you,
I think most of us were checkmated, right?
I feel very glad that just for a second you had to think about it. But this is actually why I wanted to talk about statistics for a second, because outside of this little brain tingler, statistics, especially when it comes to how do you calculate your return, there is consensus, I believe, but there's some nuance there. And depending on how you calculate your stats, it will really make a big difference. For instance, if you were to start out with $1,000 and make 100% return the first year, and then the second year lose that same percentage of return, you would not be back to where you started. You would be at zero, right? $1,000, you make 100% returns, you stack on that $1,000. Now you're at $2,000. Great. But then this year you have the same percentage loss that you hadn't gained the year before, but you're not back where you started. You are at zero. You have nothing.
Right. So in that case, you're saying you have $2,000 and it has gone down 100%. So by definition, any number that reduces by 100% is back to zero, correct?
Exactly. So a percentage loss cost you more than a percentage gain the prior year, if they were the same, all things being equal.
Yeah. I mean, to me, and what came up in my head was, okay, you have, and this is not, I know we're kind of joking here about, like, you know, numbers lie, right? But we're not exactly saying that as much as you really need to pay attention to what's in front of you, right? When you hear, oh, something went up, the growth rate of this went up 27%, but if it's on a minuscule item, that could have went up an almost infinitesimal amount. But yes, by definition, it went up 27%. Like, I think those kind of things are really, really important when you consider statistics, that, like, you need to understand in a lot of cases the baseline, what you're talking about. But I think more importantly, for what we're talking about here in terms of money, right? So let's say you have $1,000, right? And it went down, the market went down 50%. Okay. So that's year one, it went down 50%. And then it went up 50% in year two. I think a lot of people would intuitively think, oh, I'm just back to where I was. But that is not the case, right? Just looking at the math, and this is why it's important to really just have these concepts in your head. I think that's, Jonathan, what we're trying to highlight here, is just so people are armed with that mental awareness of, I need to think beyond my initial, like, blink judgment, right? Because so often our blink judgment, as we proved 10 minutes ago, right? I had no idea what a 200% return is. I could not have answered that without any kind of thought put into it. And to be fair, I'm not 100% sure I'm right. So I'm sure there are people out there yelling at me at this point.
Let's just say this, ignorance loves company. And so I was grateful that you didn't immediately correct me.
I had no idea. So, but yeah, just to finish that. So let's say you've got $1,000, right? So Jonathan, it went down 50%, right? So you're down to $500, right? And then we said, okay, year two, it went up 50%. Well, your balance is 500. So 50% of that is 250, right? So you're now at $750. So again, that blink response would be, oh, I'm just back to where I was. No harm, no foul. It went down 50. It went up 50. I'm good to go. That's not the case, as we just proved, right? You're actually 25% down from your original balance in that case. So that's why it's really important. You would actually need a 100% return. If it went down 50 in year one and then up 100% in year two, then you'd be back to where you were. So again, it's overcoming that, oh, that's so obvious, right? Like, you and I fall prey to this. Oh, it's so obvious. It's not obvious. You have to think.
That means that, like, based on what you just said, like, a percentage isn't a percentage. In that particular case, like, going down 50% and then going up 50%, you're not back to where you started. So if that's the case, that means that it fundamentally breaks average return in terms of, hey, I had this average return. How much money do I have at the end? You know, you have five numbers. They're all over the map. You average them out and then you, like, figure out what do you actually have. I don't think that would work. It exposes an opportunity for us to appreciate that how you calculate your return matters. What your understanding of return is actually matters. And even though this is maybe a little bit silly, I promise you that where I want to take this conversation is really, really important. And that is the difference between average return and, I guess, what is called in the investing community, CAGR. And Brad, I don't have that definition in front of me exactly what it means. So if you could help me out here.
Yeah, this is actually a term that I did not realize until we started doing some research for this. So yeah, it's compound annual growth rate. And here on Investopedia, it says the compound annual growth rate is the rate of return that would be required for an investment to grow from its beginning balance to its ending balance, assuming the profits were reinvested at the end of each period of the investment's lifespan. So compound annual growth rate.
All right. So this is critical. Think about this. What Brad just explained in detail just a second ago was that if you lose 25% or 50% or whatever, and then you gain 25 or 50%, that exact same amount, you're not back where you started. Right? So that means that they're not equal. The sequence of these matters drastically. And the implications of that are that if you're expecting to get some number, like let's say I got an average percentage return of 15% or whatever. And that's because you took your 30% return 1 year, your negative 5% return the next year, your 30 or 40%, you know, you had all these numbers in order and they averaged out to 15%. And then you were just to take 15% and throw it in a future investment calculation, it's not going to match what your portfolio actually is. Does that make sense, Brad? Maybe you can help me a little bit around the edges there, but that's going to be a fundamentally flawed equation if you're just taking a number, you know, your return each year, you're adding it together, dividing by the number of years and saying that's a 15% return. You throw that in a future investment calculation, that's not what your portfolio balance is going to be.
Yeah. So I think, right, we're always assuming, like in the way that we do our very simplistic, okay, the 8% return, you know, that's the rough average we use. But yeah, to your point, like there are many years that the market goes down. There are some years the market goes down. There are some years it goes up. And right, it's not as simple as just saying, okay, clearly 8% every single year. That works only on Excel, right? Or only in theory, as opposed to in reality. And I think that's where this CAGR comes in. And this more reflects reality as opposed to, okay, we're taking a market average that we've seen over X decades and just kind of very simplistically plugging in numbers and assuming that every single year when that doesn't reflect the way the world works.
So I just wanted to point out the difference in these numbers and why it's kind of important how you actually calculate that. And really this larger tool of you're going to have ups and you're going to have downs. The time of those ups and downs really matters. And the reason that's super critical is actually, you know, great. We project out a number, we hit our number, you know, we're excited that it roughly reflects this 8% return and we're calculating that using CAGR. Great. But now we're actually at retirement. And this kind of comes back into place when you're talking about this concept of safe withdrawal rate and sequence of return risk. And the way that it comes back into place is we know, based on all the work that has been done and notably work that's been done by Big Earn over at Early Retirement Now, that what happens over the first 5 years of your retirement is going to have much more impact on your retirement success, you know, success, binary success, than anything that happens outside that window. So if you have average to above average returns for the first 5 years of the market, you've basically beaten the game at that point. Conversely, if you pull the trigger and you retire and it happens to be March of 2020 and the market goes down 30% and then doesn't immediately recover the next day, then, you know, that it could potentially hurt as well if you haven't accounted for this. Brad, I'll give that back to you just for a second and we can chase that tail a little bit further.
Yeah, I definitely want to go more into that, but I think this would be a good kind of sidebar of just what is safe withdrawal rate? What do we talk about when we're talking about the 4% rule or the 4% rule of thumb, right? As we like to call it here. I think for anybody who's brand new to Chooseify or the financial independence community, this is really one of those really, really critical points that we talk about a lot, but we probably don't talk about often enough. So just I'll give my 2-minute explanation here of basically your FI number and how does this work. So how this works ultimately is you can pull out of your net worth of your investable assets a certain percentage each year to live off that money, basically, right? So what many studies have shown are roughly 4% is the number. So let's say you have $1 million, you can pull out 4% of that. So that would be $40,000. And this is indexed for inflation. So it's not stuck at 40,000 for the next 50 years. It does go up based on a small inflation number. But that gives you some sense. So basically, you look at your expenses, right, Jonathan? Which in this case, we're using $40,000. If your life costs $40,000, you are at the point of financial independence when you have 25 times that amount in your net worth, right? So that's $1 million. Just very simply, 40,000 times 25 is $1 million. It's just the opposite of that math, right? You can pull out 4% from $1 million, gets you to 40, or you can multiply the amount of your expenses by 25. Now, Big Earn, who you referenced, he has done unbelievably in-depth research on this. And I think he would say, to be absolutely safe, you know, based on historical amounts of inflation. Now, obviously, we can talk about that. We have talked about that recently. Whether that continues to be the case will obviously change these numbers. But just going with the supposition that it's based on historical inflation, Big Earn has said 3.25% will almost guarantee you. Of course, nothing is guaranteed in this world, but will get you essentially as close to guaranteed based on his simulations as possible that that is a safe withdrawal rate. So in that case, Jonathan, just really simply, 3.25% would be, if I've got that $1 million, I'm pulling out 32,500. So now naturally, if your expenses were that 40,000, you need more than $1 million to retire it. So it's something more akin to a 30 times of your annual expenses. So anyway, the precise number is not ultra critical right now. It's just that you have an understanding of, hey, what is my FI number? What are we talking about with safe withdrawal rates? What does this even mean? That's the really 2-minute version of what does FI mean in a nutshell.
When you think about, again, going to the sequence here, the timeline sequence, why that 5-year, that somewhat arbitrary, you know, 5-year window? And if you really think about it, it's because it goes back to the volatility of those few percentages at any particular point in time. So if you make market returns, well, I guess that's the wrong word because the market could be down, the market could be up. But if you make this 8% or beyond type returns, and certainly some of the crazy returns that we've seen over the last couple of years, if you make those types of returns for a period of 5 years, most of you over the last 2 to 3 years have doubled your net worth. You know, if you've been investing in the market over the last 3 to 5 years, your net worth has doubled. Your net worth has doubled over the last 3 to 5 years. And that drastically changes the equation because we're talking about on the other side of retirement, the other side of retirement. So, you know, and as some of you will be in much more conservative portfolios at that point in retirement. So you're going to have to adjust this slightly, but there are many situations where someone has, you know, has a runaway bull market on the other side of retirement. And if that happens, or at least stays the course and is kind of trending up and to the right for a period of 3 to 5 years, their retirement number that they were targeting is now they're massively ahead of where they thought they would be. And that just changes everything. I mean, it's just, you know, if you're following that rule, you're basically good to go. And that there's some adjustments that you can make, you know, if you wanted to maybe loosen up the purse strings a little bit or et cetera. But conversely, let's say that you retire and then immediately, you know, almost Murphy's Law, it's the worst possible case scenario and your portfolio gets hammered and went down, you know, something, maybe we're talking about something like 60% and you're sweating bullets. That 3.5% is not based on the actual net worth at any given point in time. It's based on a number you picked at your retirement age. So now that 3.5% might actually look like, you know, if you look like an actual percentage of your net worth. Your net worth was $1 million. The market went down 40%. You had 600,000. You're still taking that initial 3.5% based off $1 million, which was 35,000. But that's a higher percentage of your much smaller pie right now, right? And so when Earn is talking about these numbers, when people are talking about a 4% rule or 3.5% rule, it's because they're looking at it over. When Brad says it's, you know, over our historical investing period, it's not just looking at one period. If you pick the perfect day and then you landed on the perfect day or some arbitrary day, it's literally testing it in tranches like every single year, you know, in fact, frankly, in every single day, right? Over a 40-year period, started any single day over the last 100 years, all the way from the Great Depression to now, great financial crisis to now, over any of those periods, like, would this retirement plan have worked? Would they have run out of money, you know, ahead of it. And the rules that came out of that was with the 4% rule, I think you're good 90 to 95% of the time. And you could get that up to 99%, you know, with a 3.5% safe withdrawal rate. And that's assuming no flexibility. That's assuming no adjustments, no changing. Of course, it's a static number. I'm going to follow this plan and I'm not going to make any moves. I'm not going to decrease or increase my spending no matter what. I just want, you know, if you want something that fits some sort of perfect mathematical model, these are just general guardrails or guidelines that you can kind of feel good about as you come up with your own plan.
Yeah, and I think that's really important what you just said about the flexibility. Your life is not just a simple, perfect mathematical model, right? That's not the way it works, not only in terms of you have no idea what's going to happen with the market, but obviously to imagine that you wouldn't make any changes, right? Like, I'm just thinking about myself. If I, quote unquote, retired and all of a sudden the market went down 40%, well, I probably would maybe try to earn a little bit of income, or it might just happen naturally, right? I might cut back my discretionary expenses a little bit, right? I think when we had Big Earn on, he actually talked about, do you actually need to do that kind of stuff? Which that's a whole separate issue outside the bounds of this. But Jonathan, maybe you could look up the episode for that. And I know obviously Earn's been on so many times, but that might be intriguing for people to go back and listen to. But I think aside from a PhD in economics like Big Earn, somebody like me, I would change my behavior. I know that I would. And that doesn't make me good, bad, or indifferent. It's just the way it is, right? I would change my behavior slightly. I would probably go back and earn a little more money because I'd be a little nervous, or I'd spend a little bit less. And that's fine. That's human behavior. And it is what it is. But I think just going back to what I was talking about a couple of minutes ago, like just for people having for that very first time, like this might be the first episode you've ever listened to of Choose a FI. You have no idea what FI is all about. Just having some degree of certainty. Not certainty, because that's impossible in life, but having some degree of certainty of, hey, you mean I have some control over when I can be financially independent? It's not up to someone else's whim. It's not up to the Susie Ormans of the world saying I need $10 to $20 million to retire, or every retirement calculator I'm looking at saying, oh, this is based on my current income. And sorry, buddy, you're never going to retire because it's impossible. It's not like that. Those are fundamentally flawed. Both of those views are fundamentally flawed because what you need to cover your expenses, right? Like at the end of the day, if you're making no income, let's just say hypothetically, you're making no income and you have yearly expenses, what you need from your net worth, what you need from your investments is enough to cover those expenses. Nothing else. There is no one on earth that could argue otherwise. That's what you need. You need to cover those expenses. And you have a control over those expenses. You can make them as low or as high as you want. And there is no judgment here from us, from anybody in the FI community. It's not about that. It's very personal. If you live a life that costs 200 grand, okay, that's fine. If you live a life that costs 30 grand, okay, that's fine. The math still holds. And that is the important part, is you have control over this. And again, if you want to be ultra conservative, you take your annual expenses and multiply by 33, basically. If you want to go along with the 4% rule of thumb, you take your annual expenses and multiply by 25. But somewhere in that range is going to give you a very, very, very high degree of likelihood that you're going to succeed at FI, even if you earn $0 in the future. If you can't get behind that message, I don't know what will help sway you ultimately. Like, that was a game changer for me, is really the way that I'm trying to say it.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
As you work through this concept and you realize that you might need this now, or you know someone that needs it now, I think one of the things we've always tried to do is give, you know, you don't have to listen to every single episode we've ever produced to get content that serves you where you are now. So if this is resonating with you, or you need someone that's looking to implement some sort of plan, we'd like to just mention a few episodes that we've done kind of as springboards where we really focused on this exact topic. And what I mean by that is drawdown strategy. Simply drawdown strategy. How do I arrange my money? So last week, we talked a little bit about accessing, you know, different funds and triaging and that sort of thing. Well, this week, you know, really thinking about it through the lens of drawdown strategy, I'm going to point you to three episodes. First, we talked about portfolio adjustments with Big Earn, Brad, and I looked that up. I think the one probably for individuals would be episode 199, making portfolio adjustments with Vigor. And as Brad said, we've had them on many times. We've talked about secrets of return risk, emergency funds, et cetera. We recently talked about inflation for investors. But I think for the purposes of this conversation, making portfolio adjustments, that's episode 199. So with all of these, you can access any episode just by going to choosify.com/199 if that's the episode for you. But let me stack on a couple more. One of them is, like, we talked about how volatility can affect your portfolio balance, but it doesn't necessarily have to affect your withdrawal rate. When you pick a withdrawal rate, even when your money goes down, that's the reason you chose that number, so you could maintain some level of consistency throughout volatile times and feel a level of assurance about it. So let's say, you know, in that 3.5% or 4% scenario, the market goes down, you could hold the course. But conversely, what if we actually have a higher number than we need, and we want to have rules so that we can live a little, you know, fatter if we want to, and also we can dial that down and we can live a little bit leaner if we want to. Clearly talking about your budget here, right? So in that scenario, we did an episode with Michael Kitsis, and it was very timely because it was right after effectively the pandemic kind of tanked the market in March of last year. And we had actually had a early retiree that had just retired, and we'd done her, you know, she was sharing with us her plans. And one of the things that had been posed in that question was, well, what if some sort of market event happens? And then within about a month of her leaving the job, the market kind of tanked in February or March of 2020. We had Kitsis come on later on that month, and we just kind of talked about that. And we used that as an opportunity to discuss flexible spending rules for early retirees in this case. And it would translate very easily to traditional retirees as well. And that is episode 176. So it's not just that you always need to cut, you know, always need to cut. It's all about how to cut and when to cut, et cetera. It's also, what if you were to retire and the market were to go gangbusters for a few years after you walk away? Does that mean your original number still stands, or do you have room to be flexible to the good, to actually increase your spending and feel confident about that? Michael Kitsis gave us some very clear guardrails around how to do that, if you actually want to open up the purse strings a little bit. Now, the other one that I want to actually stack onto this, because I think it's really going to be useful for people to consider this, is our good friend Fritz Gilbert from Retirement Manifesto joined us on the show within the last year, I would imagine. And it is episode 206. So I just mentioned the Michael Kitsis one. I believe Michael Kitsis was 176. So choosify.com/176. That's flexible spending rules. In this one, what happens when the paycheck stops? Keys to a successful retirement with Fritz Gilbert. This is a two-part episode. It starts with episode 206. So choosify.com/206. And Fritz is a huge fan of a bucket strategy, right? And so this kind of brings a couple of these things together. In this scenario, and again, not everybody does a bucket strategy, and there's various reasons to consider it or not consider it. Big Earn considers it a form of market timing, and just Big Earn personally just treats his retirement like a paycheck, and he pays himself every week or biweekly or monthly or whatever cadence he wants. Fritz Gilbert, as one of his kind of keys, and it gives him a lot of peace of mind, is he treats it like a bucket. And he basically has a cash bucket where he pays out his whole salary for a year. And then he has other buckets that actually build on that. But in a scenario like that, think about the peace of mind you have when in retirement that first year, you have an entire year of cash just ready to go to cover all of your expenses. I mean, that's kind of, you know, talk about something bad happening, you saying, well, this will be stressful if it's still going on a year from now, right? Now there's pros and cons to that as well, but I want you to think, as you're figuring out what to do for you, I just want you to think about all three of these. And then that will allow you to come up with your retirement strategy, whether it be early or traditional retirement, and also might inform your investor policy statement as well.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think it's important that you highlighted that there are so many different methods, and that's not to overload people with information. I think it's, for me at least, it's the contrary. It's, okay, I don't have to get it exactly right, right? Because as you just kind of intimated about Fritz's strategy, I don't think anybody looking at that would say that is the mathematically perfect way to do it, right? Like, he takes an entire year's worth of his money out of the market every year. You know, I'm putting words in his mouth. I don't think this precisely, but let's say on the first of the year, he takes that entire year's worth of spending out of the market. Is that going to be the best strategy if we're talking about just straight math every year forever? Probably not.
Well, let me pause you. I've been thinking about this recently. Fritz isn't taking it out of the stock market. He's taking it out of what he would have had in bonds, probably in our scenario. Is he really losing out by not having well, a right year in bonds not. Right now? No. Like, can anyone fault him for not having a year's worth of cash sitting in these wonderful bonds that are doing so much for right. us? Right.
But no, I mean, that's a great point. Thank you for the clarification, most importantly. But the beautiful part is, again, it almost, even if he was earning a couple percent on that, you can still make the case to do it because of precisely what you said. It's the, does this pass the, can I sleep well at night test? And for him and for many people, that would certainly help. If you, no matter what happens this next year, I don't have to worry for 1 second, right? And again, that's why I'm really trying to dial in on this, is that this journey is very personal. There's no dogma here. There's no, you need to do X, Y, and Z to be a card-carrying member of the FI community or the Choose a FI community. We don't roll like that. This is very personal, and all of us do things that are not mathematically optimal, right? Like, I do more things that I could count, and I don't care because it helps me sleep well at night. It helps me not stress. It helps me put things on autopilot. Like, Jonathan, actually, my checking account went down to like $4,000 for the first time in a very, very long time the other day. And I'm like, I'm actually like sweating it, even though I've already accounted for all my bills. And I know that's a huge, huge cushion, that most people don't have a $4,000 cushion in their bank account. But in my own brain, that doesn't work. So I'm actually thinking about transferring money from somewhere, like ridiculous things. But again, we all have to overcome our own brains and we need to know our weaknesses. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just you have to understand how you work and you make systems that fit into your own brain's pattern, if you will.
My comfort balance is like 1500. No, I sweat a little bit there, but I think I sweat more because I know my Globo Bank is going to charge me a $5 fee if right. it drops below that minimum balance. But seriously, that is funny. It's funny that 4,000 is a stress point for you.
Obviously, first world problems. What I nice certainly understand
problem.
That. But... Oh, man.
All right. So I hope everybody could kind of laugh at us, hopefully with us a little bit at that fun little journey through statistics. But I hope you can also see how paying attention to the numbers and appreciating those really helps you to appreciate why there are these rule of thumbs and what these rule of thumbs really are. And why, even though a market could do really, really well multiple years in a row, you still want to probably come up with a rule of thumb because the future is unknown. You want to understand, you know, why you're going into this. So in the spirit of getting a little bit better with statistics, getting better with our money, we also like to talk about financial literacy and we like to talk about second generation financial independence. And through that lens, we wanted to actually invite Rob Phelan back on the show. Rob Phelan is the founder of Simple Startup, and it's a entrepreneurship camp with a heart for kids and second generation financial independence. And truly, with the world shifting around us, the only thing that I can point you to, you know, in terms of like a skill set that's going to translate for your kids into the future is entrepreneurship. It is a life skill. You know, you're not looking at it through tunnel vision. It's the language of business. Whether they actually become an entrepreneur or they're working for another business, it gives them the ability to communicate with that lens. It's incredibly valuable both for themselves. It's invaluable to them as they go to admissions offices, as they go to college. It's a life learning experience. And I can say at this point, literally hundreds of kids from the Choose a FI community have gone through this program. The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. So I just wanted to start with that. Rob Phelan, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, fellas. Thanks so much for having me back. Hi, everyone at home. Yeah. And I love what you said about entrepreneurship being this like timeless skill, because when we say like, oh, entrepreneurship, people sometimes think, oh, it's starting a business. Cool. Whatever. Like my kid doesn't really want to do that, or I don't want to do that. But at its core, entrepreneurship is about solving today's problems for people and finding ways to provide those solutions, and ideally in ways that are going to be profitable or economical or faster, whatever you want to call it. And that is something that every industry needs, whether you're an employee or you're running your own business. So yeah, I love talking about entrepreneurship and kids. So let's do this for sure.
And Rob, it's important to note that, like you're saying, when most people hear entrepreneurship or starting a business, they think, oh, I've got to put together a business plan, and oh, I have to raise money or borrow money or get a loan or something ridiculous like that. Like, I think what people like you and Alan Donegan have taught us is this is a skill set and you can do it very inexpensively and get started. And that doesn't mean just dallying in this. Like, you can get started very inexpensively and actually make a real business, right?
Yeah. And I think that's where the fun is. It's sort of this challenge, like as kids, especially, like there isn't a ton of capital available. No one's giving you a loan right now. You have to do this with the resources you have available. And I think most of us don't realize how much we have available, both internally, so our own skills, our own knowledge, the things that we love to do, and then also externally, the stuff that's maybe lying around the house or the people that we have access to, the facilities in our schools or in our local community. There is so much out there that you can build a business around. And part of the Simple Startup is just helping kids to realize what's already there. So we begin with idea generation, coming up with at least 10 to 20 ideas so that they can start narrowing down, okay, which one of these do I want to do, rather than struggling with I need the one magic idea.
I think parents don't always appreciate how much their kids want to do this. I was driving down the street, we were biking down the street with the family the other day, and I saw two kids lugging. It was a weekend. It was relatively early. I saw two kids dragging out a table, and I was like, they're setting up the lemonade stand again. It's coming. I wonder if it's going to be country time. Anyways, it's Brad knows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But mom's on the front porch saying, "What are you doing?" And they're like, "We're setting up the lemonade stand." She's like, "No, you're not. We didn't talk about this. We don't have dad doesn't have time to set this up. Bring it back inside. Bring it back." And I was just thinking, like, generally, what kids get for entrepreneurship, and it's not bad, but we get lemonade stands and we get, you know, Boy Scout peanuts, Girl Scout cookies. That is what we limit our kids. That ends up being, at the age of 8, looking back, 16, looking back, that's their idea of what entrepreneurship is. It's Boy Scout cookies, Girl Scout cookies, and lemonade stands that maybe their school had them do. Okay. We don't have to limit ourselves to that. Like, when you actually think about what experience could we deliver to our kids between just setting up a table and seeing if neighbors will pay 25%, which is better than a lot, but to be honest with you, it's not super inspiring. Like, what we really want them to think about is like the aspects of building a business, which, if you think about three different things, it's how do we find customers? How do we create an offer or a product? And then how do we deliver that product or service? Like, each one of these are an opportunity to actually build out a learning set. And Rob, I'll give it back to you. Does that resonate with you, or would you say I'm even missing it even more than that?
No, I think you got it spot on. And I love the story of the kid taking the table out. At least it was a lemonade stand, not a yard sale.
No, it's the weekend.
Like,
no.
Kids starting their own yard sale and just selling everything in the house. Like, that's the one they're worried about.
Put it back in the garage.
I mean, do you guys remember Annalise, who came on the podcast?
Yes.
Did either of you get the email from her like 2 weeks ago where she reached out to my wife? My wife has bought cards from her in the past, and she reached out and said, "Hi, Mrs. Phelan. I just want to let you know that the fall cards are out. My Halloween stock is in. I really have loved making these cards. Are you interested in buying one?" And like, my heart just like swelled with pride, because I'm like, this girl is going out there, going back to her existing customers and asking for sales again. And I'm like, that's amazing. That's wonderful. And of course, she got a sale for my wife. And Jonathan, I know you're a sucker for these things too. Did you get an email?
I don't know if I got the Halloween one, but I've gotten two so far. So, yep.
Yeah. So she's into Halloween cards now.
That's so great. But Rob, think about the life skills from that, right? Just from that, like following up with somebody, talking to adults. Like, I know I have two daughters, right? And getting them to talk to adults in different situations, like that truly is a life skill, right? Reaching out via electronic communication, that's a life skill. Like, even if they don't have a successful business, you're stacking all these little things that like are not just apparent and obvious and easy for most kids, right? So it's all these little life things. And oh, by the way, making some money isn't so bad either if it works out. But even if it isn't, it by no means is this a total loss or a waste of time. Like, quite the contrary. It's stacking skill after skill after skill. And it's just cool. Like, yes. Remarketing, right? In that case, knowing that, who are your best customers? Is it easier to sell again to a customer who has already taken their credit card out and paid you, or to find some brand new customer off the street? Obviously, it's easier to sell again to your existing customer base. So like something like that, that makes my heart swell with pride. Like, that is so cool.
Yeah. And I love what you said there about the success and how we measure success. And I think a lot of people will measure the success of a business based on, is it profitable and how much money it makes? But when we do the Simple Startup, at the very beginning, I start talking to kids about like, here's how we're going to judge ourselves and on success. And it's not going to be about how much money your business makes. It's going to be about what you learned, what you tried, and did you step out of that comfort zone? And, you know, you guys talk about this all the time, that you don't grow and learn until you start getting uncomfortable. And that is the hardest thing, like going up to an adult for the first time and asking them to even just to tell you what they think of your business, never mind, like, will you buy something from it, is a really hard thing to do. And if a kid can accomplish that in the time they spend with me, I think that's a huge success. And that's, they've already learned more from that than they will in so many of the classes that they will take in school.
Yeah, I think, you know, so we had two episodes where we talked to kids that have gone through the Simple Startup, kind of sharing their business model. So Annalise and Ariana, and you can find those episodes. They're episodes 308 and 271. So you can find them at chooseify.com/308 and chooseify.com/271 for more information on that. But I remember when we were talking with Ariana, she was telling, and her mom was actually on that episode with her as well. And she was just saying to be able to see Ariana actually translate. She's like, she saw this little bit of entrepreneurship. And in this case, it was being funneled inside of like a video game, like Minecraft, et cetera. The kids, they want to pursue entrepreneurship in many cases, but like the opportunities we get are mostly limited to like the video games. But if that is the only instance they get, that doesn't feel like real world. They don't translate that to the real world. So you can help them make that bridge and say, let's do it in real life. And then how much more valuable would it actually be for you? And so it's great. But if we're stuck with the lemonade stand idea is the end of what we can offer, even that is great. If we can start to add some of these extra layers, some of these other skill sets, your child really needs to be able to come away with more than, hey, I bought lemonade XYZ, made this many servings, made 250. I had this much in profit. That's good. But Rob, over a period of 8 weeks or over the period of whatever the term is, walk us through basically what are the business building steps that these kids are going to learn in group and, you know, being coached by you effectively?
Yeah. So first going back to the video game thing, like it's amazing how the world is developing. Because Brad, remember we got a conversation recently on Twitter where a dad was saying like, hey, my daughter wants to start selling NFTs. She's like 8 years old and is trying to create a business in the digital world. And we're seeing these kind of meta world businesses now as well, where like kids are buying and selling digital artifacts in their games with real world currency. Like, so it doesn't mean that you have to like get out of the basement to actually do a business. You can really follow your kids' interests, intuitions, and where they're already being entrepreneurial and just kind of like let that grow. But to go back to your question, Jonathan, like in the course, what we will do is we'll start with just how do you come up with ideas? How do you find ones that actually solve problems for people? So there are lots of ideas out there. Not all of them are great business ideas. So we try and filter out which ones are going to be good ones, which ones are not. We rank them in terms of order. So what's plan A? If we decide that that doesn't work further down, what's B, what's C? So there's always this kind of idea that we're just going to pivot straight into something else if we need to. We'll look at the people that we involve in our business. So are we going to have teammates? Are we going to do it on our own? We'll create a business snapshot. And this, like you alluded to before, is not a business plan. This is just a quick blueprint of what this business might look like in our minds. And then we start building it and we start adjusting based on things like our market research and the feedback that our customers are giving us. So we start fast and we start free, or as close to free as possible, and then grow the business with the profits and based on what our customers are telling us. And then along the way, we'll explore things like pricing and where you're placing your company or your product or your service. We'll talk about how you promote it and market it. We'll do some side things like, do you actually need a website? How do you navigate social media if you're going to do that for your company? And then we talk about communication, which I think is one of the biggest skills that we kind of build throughout this course. Like, how do you talk to other people in a way that's going to communicate your message and then also give them as much information as possible to allow them to make a buying decision and then like kind of encourage them to go that way too.
So if you want to, you know, if you're listening to this thing, that would be a good experience for my child. There's two different ways to do this. One is if you want to take the role of the primary coach, as a parent wants to take the role of the primary coach, there is just a course that you could start on demand anytime. All the content is actually there. You go through it and you can kind of act as that primary teacher for your child, making sure they're getting what they need. But Rob, very specifically, you know, a couple times a year, you open this up for group coaching and explain, you know, what that adds on top of what they would get just with, you know, the course they can get anytime.
Yeah. So I liken this to a virtual summer camp. And that's how this whole thing started. Was summer camps disappeared in 2020. And I wanted to provide something for parents and kids to do. So in a summer camp, you're going to turn up, you're going to have a leader there. I'm not like this dictator teacher who's going to spell out everything for every kid. This is not a like step one, step two, step three. This is every kid developing their own ideas. And I'm there as this guide, this accountability partner. And so is every other person in the course. So a big difference between doing it on your own in the on-demand model and doing it in the group model is we're going to meet weekly for hour-long webinars where we're going to share with each other, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What struggles are you having? What are your successes? So we are that accountability group, which we know is so important for kind of sticking through things when they get hard, learning from each other, getting questions answered, those things that'll just help kids kind of stay with it and keep it moving forward, even if they're a little uncertain about what they're doing. And we've done things like have kids like practice doing cold calls. So if they're going to go knock on doors and explain to neighbors about their businesses, they'll practice that out and we'll give feedback. We've looked at marketing efforts and seen like what maybe some posters people are doing and given feedback on those. I brought guest speakers on, like Alan Donegan has come in and talked to my students before and shared his visions about like what makes the right time to move on from business or to pivot or to keep doing what you're doing. So there's so much value in there in the live part on top of the on-demand video lessons that are part of the year-round course.
Rob, so in the past, you've said this is generally for kids ages 10 to 18, if memory serves. Is that still roughly accurate?
Yeah. And I get a lot of questions about, I have like a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old at home who's interested in doing this. I will never tell a kid that they cannot do something. The reason I put that lower age limit on it is typically if a kid is going to be doing this on their own, 10 seems to be about the age where they have enough literacy in terms of understanding the different words that are going to pop up, a little bit more self-responsibility and drive. They're able to, you know, go take care of a lot of stuff themselves without needing a parent to hold their hand the entire way. Younger kids can definitely do it, but parents, you may need to be a little bit more involved on your end. I'm not saying you'll have to. There are exceptional kids everywhere. I meet them all the time, but just a general rule of thumb, 10 is probably a good age to start thinking about this. And then 18 on the upper end, I wanted to keep this a course for minors. So we're specifically providing this for minors. It's not to say that this isn't something for adults, but there are a million courses out there for adults for entrepreneurship. There are very few out there for this particular age group. And that's where I really want to focus my time because there's so much potential in this group. And I love seeing what kids come up with when you give them the opportunity.
Thanks, Rob. And to everyone listening, I hope that kind of gives you a sense for, you know, what to expect and why this would be a fantastic use of your child's time, both like while they're learning it and literally carrying them into a future-proof reality. It's a wonderful skill set to have as a foundation. We've got a special offer for you. If you want to enroll your child in this cohort group, you can go to chooseify.com/startup. And at the checkout page, there'll be a coupon option. Put in winter 10 to get a discount on your offer. Thank you, Rob, for coming on the show. And I'll just add on to this. I want to give you a small congratulations because I know you just released, well, two congratulations, actually. I know you have several schools that are actually looking at incorporating Simple Startup into their curriculum. That's how popular it is. So I just want to give you the product's phenomenal.
Thank you. People are
absolutely loving it. And I can see why the academic system is wanting their own students to experience this. And then two, I know you just got your children's book published and I'd love just give you just a half second to tell people a little bit more about that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's super exciting. M is for Money is the name of my children's book that I brought out. It's for 3 to 8-year-olds. It's an ABCs of money book that's going to teach your kids about the kind of basic money vocabulary that's out there that they can start learning about from age 3. And it will help normalize conversations about money between family, friends, classrooms, wherever you're using this. So we're trying to break the taboo about having money talks at home or with our friends. And then we're also recognizing that kids can start learning about money from a very young age. And the research is showing us that between the ages of 3 and 7, most of our money habits are formed that we take into adulthood. So, you know, after that, we start bringing people like James Clear back to be like, how do we change those habits? So let's try and attack them early and get them right.
And Rob, if someone wants to check out that book, where can they find it?
All right. So you'll find all the links to purchase at msformoneybook.com. It's available on all major booksellers.
Awesome. And I'll go so far as to add everyone that Rob has actually given us 3 copies of his book. So if you end up wanting to enroll your 10-year-old or beyond 10 to 18-year-old in the Simple Startup cohort course and would like a chance to win a free copy of the M is a Money book, we have 3 giveaway books that Rob has given us. So if you will just send us your proof of purchase to feedback@chooseify.com. We will take those and we will distribute, you know, we'll do a random drawing for those 3 books. You would just need to have your child enrolled in the Simple Startup to qualify. So fun little giveaway there. Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, guys, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.